Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Ask the experts about free fitting on all our kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
There's some breaking news there about the British Deputy Prime Minister, Angela Rayner. She's currently doing an interview right now with Sky News, saying that she didn't pay enough stamp duty on her second home. She's referred herself to the Independent Advisor on Ministerial Standards over the matter. And if you keep an eye on the headlines across the water, you'll know that for the last number of days, she's been under intense pressure. This was over the purchase of a very nice apartment in Brighton. And the allegation was that she hadn't paid enough stamp duty. She's come out this morning in that interview, which is airing now on Sky News, saying that that is the case. And she apologises. She's saying that that was the advice that she got on the time. She's prepared now to pay the amount that she owes. That will have implications, so we'll keep an eye on that one. Now, he's the bête noire of European politics, a thorn in the side of his fellow EU leaders. He's close to Vladimir Putin. He's blocked efforts to reach a coordinated position on the war in Ukraine. He's also caused alarm amongst LGBT campaigners after he recently banned pride events in his home country. I'm talking about the controversial Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban. And Graham Finlay from the UCD School of Politics and International Relations is here now to tell us all about him as part of our series on European leaders, the ones we are very interested in knowing the backstory of. Graham, good to see you again. Thank you for being here. So will you go back first of all and tell us about Viktor Orban's beginnings and what took him to the point where he became a politician?
Yeah, so he starts off, grows up under communism in Hungary, and he starts off as a sort of liberal democratic critic of communism in Hungary. He goes to Oxford eventually on a George Soros scholarship, which is slightly ironic given that he's built much of his brand on attacking George Soros in what have frequently been referred to as anti-Semitic terms. So he, while at Oxford, he sort of comes back, helps found Fidesz, which at the time is a sort of liberal anti-communist party. Communism falls in Hungary, along with many other places, and he's pretty quickly elected to office in 1990.
And then he moves the party after that time, once he's in office. Is it almost immediate that the party moves centre-right and then further to the right?
Yeah, almost immediately it is moved to the right. They lose a lot of the original founders, who are sort of Hungarian liberal intellectuals, and it already had sort of quite a nationalist streak when it's elected for the first time as a government, soon after. Mm-hmm. But he governs more or less like a sort of normal center-right politician. You know, he cuts taxes, increasingly does play a sort of nationalist card. But then he goes out of power and is eventually reelected in 2010. And it seems quite clear that he's planning never to be out of power again pretty quickly after 2010.
So that period between 2002 and 2010, when he was out of office, really, if you're looking at the formation of who he is now, that's the critical time, is it, when he was in opposition?
Yeah, I think he made the decision not to be a normal politician. I mean, we have to remember that at this point, Hungary's democracy was very young. Right. It still has a constitution which is a holdover from sort of the communist period or slightly modified. And it's that constitution which gives him a supermajority in the parliament in 2010. And so he got a 50-something percent of the vote, but 68% of the seats. And this is something we see around the world where politicians have supermajorities, including in U.S. states. They can alter the constitution at will. We're seeing it in the current gerrymandering conflict in the United States.
Well, got to wonder, did the Americans take a leaf from Viktor Orban's book here?
They really have. I mean, if you want to see the sort of influence, he adopts basically a Putin playbook by taking control. The first things he did was alter the constitution to make it much easier to preserve his supermajority, but also to control the media. So he has an opposition politician who's really a dogged critic of his. And he points out that while Putin did it with oil money, which he could then send to oligarchs who would then buy the media and make it pro-Putin, Orban did it with European Union money. And this is probably part of the resentment which he has in many European capitals. So he funnels European money, I don't think we're even saying allegedly, to his family and friends, and they then use it to buy up Hungarian media outlets, And then there's a very strict control of the state media outlets by the government. And it really has marginalized any critical voices. He also moved on the universities. So the universities have been taken over largely by Orban loyalists. And most of my friends in Hungary are constitutional and human rights lawyers. So they get to see this in real time. And so he takes this playbook and a lot of this culture war, because he does it in the name of sort of protecting children from LGBT rights, anti-migration, traditional values, also hallmarks of Putin's approach. You know, he, on the basis of this, he's able to keep the Hungarian people with a very gerrymandered and lopsided constitutional electoral system. He's been able to keep himself in power through three elections since during much of which he's ruled by decree. And all of this led to Transparency International describing Hungary as the most corrupt country in the European Union, and also Freedom House as not fully free. It's been described as a liberal autocracy, mm-hmm. or an electoral autocracy.
And what type of a politician is he? Is he a charismatic person, or does he rule with an iron fist? Does he rule through fear? What's his shtick as a politician?
That's a really good question. I mean, when I was in Budapest, I think people like us from outside who spent a lot of time looking at Viktor Orban, but don't go to Hungary much. Last time I'd been there was under communism. It's just somewhat changed since then. We had a speech from the local mayor of the castle district where Orban is putting his sort of regal seat of power in the castle, whereas before, not even the communist rulers used to rule out of the lovely castle in Budapest. And the mayor of the castle district was an eco-feminist, right? So there is politics in Hungary. Mm-hmm. But Fidesz is popular up until recently, because of the sort of nationalism and culture war and the fear of migrants and the sense that he was getting things for Hungary out of the European Union, because he constantly bashes the European Union for domestic consumption, even as he makes sure that he continues to receive
the funds. And what about measures taken or afoot to stop that from happening? Because there are some, aren't there?
It has, but Europe has been quite ineffective at doing so, frankly. I mean, so he uses his veto wherever he has it, especially on foreign affairs, to extract these concerns. The European Parliament, in one of its most interesting acts, actually triggered an investigation into Hungary over the decline of the rule of law. I mean, again, he has been ruling by decree for much of the last decade. So that investigation is ongoing. The EU has suspended funding to Hungary at various points. There's still the talk about suspending their voting rights, including during the Hungarian presidency in 2024, where they took many, many steps to try and restrict the power of the Hungarian presidency and sort of denounced all of his freelance foreign policy trips to Kiev, to Beijing, and to Moscow in pursuit of a peace deal, explicitly saying he does not represent the European Union, he is not doing this as the president of the Council of the European Union. And there was an amazing moment in the European Parliament where he, as the incoming president, he appeared and was just berated by the MPs saying he should be in jail and so forth.
Yeah, but, the European Union is often accused of moving slowly. And like there's an investigation underway which began in 2018 into Hungary.
Yeah.
That's the one you were talking about, that could lead to the suspension of the voting rights. But it's how many years old now?
Yeah.
It's
and
7 years old.
It is as transactional as this. I mean, they have unsuspended up to 9 billion euro just to get him to leave the room so they can make a decision on Ukraine, right? So not even vote with them, but just not be there.
Mm-hmm.
He's shown a tremendous ability to continue to extract this funds. His economic policies, Hungary's economy is not great, but it's not too bad. They've been able to bring in a flat tax. But most of that European money is going into his friends and family's pocket, the pockets. The symbol of his corruption is this vast palace complete with zoo, which he's constructed outside his father bought this small farm outside his hometown.
Mm-hmm.
but it's an absolutely lavish palace.
And doesn't he have, or he has funded, a huge football stadium in his hometown as well, because he was a footballer?
Yeah, he's absolutely mad about football by all accounts, watches football matches constantly. He was a professional football. I'm not going to try to pronounce his hometown's name.
That's okay. Hungarian names are tough.
Felkshoot, but Hungarian listeners, apologies. But yeah, he built, I mean, it's meters from his house, you know, and so it's got all of the sort of trappings of something you'd associate with Putin or some other, you know, non-democratically elected
leader. So he, you spoke about his domestic economic policy, and one of the more eye-raising policies was that decision, if you're female and if you have four children, you're exempt from paying income tax for life. But the allegation from his critics is, well, that's all being funded by EU money.
Yeah, and also, exactly. I mean, if you have a flat tax, you're not going to be bringing in as much income tax as if you have a progressive tax system. And again, these are the policies, these pro-natalist policies have gotten the attention of American conservatives and are widely trumpeted around the internet by people like Elon Musk and many other people. The problem is they don't work. So Hungary's birth rate has not increased despite having quite eye-watering sort of tax
incentives,
cuts for people who want to have more children, specifically mothers. And that's gotten a lot of attention for Orbán on the Republican right in the United States. And Tucker Carlson and Steve Bannon are going to Budapest to have events. He's speaking at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, like Maloney, actually, last week. But it's not working. So somewhat ironically, he's had to bring in migrant workers to keep the Hungarian economy going. I mean, the Hungarian economy is very, very interesting. It involves a lot of making of cars and machinery and electronic goods and stuff like that. And so he's also, as part of this, courted energy from Putin. This is part of his recent conflict with Ukraine, is attacks on pipelines bringing gas and oil into Hungary, but also with Beijing, which he's trying to get to invest, especially in battery plants in Hungary. So that's where the economy is.
What about his opposite number, Peter Magyar, former ally?
Well, this is what's making things interesting. Orbán continues to clash with people like Friedrich Merz in Germany over these issues surrounding Ukraine. He's increasingly seen as a security threat by his fellow European leaders. But he's now under pressure at home because this incredible palace, but you know, also just the general sense that, you know, he's enriched his family and friends to an extraordinary degree at the expense of the people of Hungary enjoying access to medical care. Has led this insider, this former Fidesz member who was married to Orbán's former justice minister, to use his insider knowledge, specifically of a cover-up of a child abuse scandal, to really blow Hungarian politics open. And he's managed to revitalize a party called Tija, and he's now leading in the polls. He's a member of the European Parliament, but that party is leading Orbán by Orbán's party by 5 to 7% in the polls for the upcoming election in 2 years' time. He, you know, will have to win big because the gerrymandering of the regional seats in Hungary's parliament is so dramatic that they estimate that he's going to have to win the popular vote by 5 to 6% to get a majority.
Okay. Right?
Currently, it's at 7 to 12%, but they're expecting those polls to narrow.
Okay, it's fascinating, and we have another European leader to talk about next week, Donald Tusk, the Polish Prime Minister, who came out this morning in favour of the Mercosur deal, by the way, which we were talking about earlier. We can't block Mercosur, is what he's saying, and he's convinced that there will be guarantees in there that will satisfy the people who are very worried about the impact it might have for farmers in particular. Graham, thank you so much. Graham Finley, we'll talk to you next week about Donald Tusk. Right now, though, we'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.